This is Perspectives with Barry Shainbaum. Recorded in the heart of downtown Toronto, we explore different viewpoints on life through interviews. This interview originally aired in 2006 on Faith FM in Kitchener, Ontario. It has since been remastered and edited.
Welcome to Sunday Morning with Barry Shainbaum on Faith FM. Those of you that were listening carefully might have heard another voice singing with the Orenu Choir for Humanistic Judaism. My guest here in Kitchener this morning is the wonderful Howard Jerome. And in Howard's words, before I let him speak, I have been a beatnik, a socialist, a wrestler, a folk singer, a football player, and a hippie, and now I'm a rapping. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning. Good morning to my dear friends whom I've not yet met. God bless you this day. And if anything I have to say is of any use to anybody, well, God has blessed us all.
That's good. Howard, you've been an actor now for how many years? How many decades?
These many.
You have a great face for radio, too.
For well over 40 years, it's been my very great blessing to earn a living doing something I love as an actor, as a writer, producer, director, in all medium, television and movies and theater, and commercials and voices and cartoons. It's been a miracle blessing for me.
It's a blessing for me, too. I first heard of Howard in 1988 when he played a role in the movie The Outside Chance of Maximilian Glick. Tell us a bit about that movie, Howard.
Well, a friend of mine wrote it, Phil Savath, Alav Shalom, may he rest in peace. We just lost him this year. And he was part of a thing called the Homemade Theater, who were involved in improvisation, as I was involved in improvisation. I was asked to play the role of Zelig Pikus, who was the owner of the used car company and the president of the shul board. And it was such a joy to play that role in a movie that went on to win the Best Canadian Film of the Year, an international competition of Canadian films. So it was an honor for me to be in that movie. And it was recently shown in a retrospective at the Bloor Street Cinema, 25-year retrospective of that movie.
That movie made an impact in my life. There was a young boy in that movie, and he was torn between his heart and what his family and maybe the used car dealer was trying to do. Give us a bit of an update on that movie.
Well, the story was the boy just getting ready for his bar mitzvah, growing up in a small town north of Winnipeg, and a small Jewish community surrounded by a non-Jewish community, and his friendship with a young non-Jewish girl and how that affected his family. And it was a comedy, but a lot of people could relate to the fact that some of the stuff was just not so funny. The pressure on a young Jewish boy to keep his Jewish roots and to not fraternize with the non-Jewish community. And all of the service that it goes through, being a young Jewish boy faced with the guilt and confusion, and then coming of age and demanding his right to speak for himself. It was a joy to play in that movie.
And what was your role? How did you interact with the young star of the movie?
Well, as the president of the shul and one of the major balabusters in the masculine form, It was my job to make sure that he towed the Jewish line. And when, by some confusion, they brought in a Hasid rabbi into this tiny little town in Beauséjour, Manitoba, it created all kinds of havoc as we, the older Jewish community, we're now confronted with, oh my God, there's a black hat amongst us. What are we going to do now? So the whole community was kind of confronted with their own Jewishness. How much Jewish can you stand, basically? Oh, I have to tell you two jokes.
Okay, we have time.
All right, these are the two jokes that define what part of the problem was in that movie. Joke number one, a Jewish guy gets stranded on an island. 5 years goes by, and a boat comes to finally rescue him. And the captain of the boat gets off the boat and looks around. He says, my word, you have built yourself a home. How beautiful. And you've built yourself what looks like a store where you lay out your coconuts and your fish. And you've built a synagogue. Oh, that is lovely. And you've built yourself another synagogue. Why would you build two synagogues? And the man answers, the synagogue over here on the right-hand side, this is the synagogue what I go to. And the synagogue on the left-hand side is the synagogue I wouldn't step my foot into. And so that story identifies part of the Jewish dilemma. How Jewish is Jewish? How Jewish should you be? Should you wear a black hat? If you don't wear a black hat, are you kosher? Are you considered a Jew? It's joke number two. A Jewish guy wins a Ferrari, goes to an Orthodox rabbi, says, Rabbi, would you say a brucha for my Ferrari? And the rabbi says, a brucha for a Ferrari? This is Torah. We don't do bruchas for Ferrari. So he goes and he asks a conservative rabbi. He says, Rabbi, would you say a brucha for my Ferrari? And the rabbi says, well, it's a complicated issue, stroking his beard. I'll have to talk to the board. Are you a member of the shul? A paid member? So he goes to a reform rabbi and says, Rabbi, would you say a brucha for my Ferrari? And the rabbi says, oh, I love Ferraris. What's a brucha? So that story, again, identifies who's allowed to call themselves Jewish. And while both jokes are somewhat funny, they also describe a serious situation amongst Jews, which was the basis of the comedy in the Maximilian Glick movie, which is how Jewish is it okay to be?
So let's go back to square one. Howard Jerome was born a young child somewhere in Brooklyn, New York.
That's correct. I was born in what they call Brownsville, Brooklyn. And Brownsville is described as some neighborhoods fall into ruin. He said Brownsville was born in ruin and managed to stay that way. It was the home, though, however, of some very famous people. Jerry Lewis came from Brownsville, Brooklyn. Zero Mostel was born in Brownsville, Brooklyn. And so that neighborhood is famous. It's now famous for Mike Tyson. He grew up in Brownsville, Brooklyn.
I didn't know he was Jewish.
Absolutely. I actually ran into him recently in Phoenix, Arizona. I was doing a show at the Arizona Jewish Theater, and Mike Tyson was in a movie theater. And I went over to him and introduced myself. I told him I'm from the hood.
Right.
And we had a funny little moment together, me and Mike Tyson. I don't think I could take him on, however.
Not anymore.
No. However, at one time I could. I used to wrestle professionally. For a couple of years, I wrestled as a phony Austrian. I called myself Eric von Hess. And I used to talk with a phony German accent, you know. I take you, I break you, I throw you from the rink. And I pretended to be Austrian. I had a partner. He pretended to be Italian. And we wrestled tag team as the Axis Powers. That was our tag team name. Villains. Villains always got in trouble as wrestlers, because the danger was not in the ring, but outside the ring. The audience took it seriously. And so they would throw cigarettes at you, hot coffee, wow, trying to cut you. And so this nice Jewish boy was wrestling as a fake German. It was fun.
How does one learn to be a wrestler?
There are wrestling schools.
Did you go to a wrestling school?
Absolutely. I trained in the same gym as Bruno Sammartino. We had the same basic manager at that time. And I wrestled for about 2 years. I never made it into the big time. I was a club wrestler. And so after 2 years, I recognized I was not going to get my big break, and I shifted from wrestling to acting.
Well, and before you were a wrestler, you were a young boy growing up in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up in Brooklyn in those days?
Well, I could romanticize it, but for me, it was not very much fun. My father died when I was only four, so I never really knew him. I grew up on welfare. You know, when they talk about rich Jews, I laugh at you, because for the first 16 years of my life, I was a welfare Jew, which was not much fun, which put me into a class of somebody who was not very proud of themselves, had a poor self-image, not a very good student, an asthmatic kid, and the fat kid. And thank God I had a doctor who said, you have to do something to increase your lung power. So I began lifting weights, and I became quite good at it. And I went from the fat kid that you poked and the last one that you chose on your team. You know, when you choose upsides, they'd say, okay, you got Howard this time. And I said, no, I had him last time. You take him this time. No. If we take him, then we're not playing. I went from that kid to the big, strong Howard. From then on, I became one of the first chosen. And they say, we got Howard. So, no, we got Howard. Mm. You had him last time. No, if he's on your team, we're not playing. So I became a strong guy who people got to be afraid of. I began to enjoy the pain, mine or yours.
Do you think you'll ever get past that pain of growing up completely?
With God's help, I've been working on that, you know, both spiritually, therapeutically, for decades. Making some great insights, leaving behind some great emotional scars, which I acquired as a kid, and learning to love myself in spite of it all, and to forgive, because forgiveness is where it's at. And through the blessed study for the last 13 years in studying the Kabbalah, I understand the process called the tshuva, the return to the moment of the pain, and to undo the pain by promoting healing through forgiveness.
It's like a process of psychotherapy.
Absolutely.
You relive the past.
Absolutely.
And then when you relive it, but as an adult from a place of security, then it washes away, it slips off.
Yes.
The pain.
As I wrote in one of my song poems, is that the scars will heal, the memory fade, the pain will wither away, and the wounds of the past need not last. Tomorrow is not yesterday. And if there's one thing I've learned from the hurting I've had, this is what I know so far. It's not the pain that you bear, but the love that you share that can change everything you are.
That's beautiful. And Howard, would you be such a funny guy today if you wouldn't have had those pains as a young guy?
I think it's tradition, that
you know,
the pain is masked by the humor.
It's
sure.
Funny you did that because it's time for a musical break.
Our prosperity to good health and happiness.
And most important, to life, l'chaim.
L'chaim, l'chaim, to life.
Is to the father I've tried to be.
Is to my bride to be.
Drink l'chaim, to life, l'chaim.
L'chaim, l'chaim, to life. Life has a way of confusing us.
Blessing and bruising us.
Drink l'chaim, to life.
God would like us to be joyful, even when our hearts lie panting on the floor.
Yay,
it gives you something to think about.
Something to drink about.
Drink l'chaim.
Amen.
Mocha! Yes, what is it, Lizabeth?
That mocha drinks for everybody.
What's the big occasion, Lizabeth?
I am taking myself a bride.
Who's the lucky one?
Tevye's eldest, Zeitel.
Today's a wolf to Tevye.
To Zeitel, your daughter.
My wife.
May all your futures be pleasant ones, not like our present ones. Bring L'chaim to life. To life, l'chaim, 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 to life. It takes a wedding to make us say, let's live another day. Drink l'chaim to life. We'll raise a glass and sip with proper schnapps in honor of the great good luck and favor you. We know that when good fortune favors to such men, it stands to reason we deserve it too. To us and our good fortune. Be happy, be healthy, long life! And if our good fortune never comes, kiss to whatever comes, drink l'chaim!
I have to thank Howard Jerome for saying tradition when I have To Life queued up from Fiddler on the Roof. Thank you so much, Mr. Jerome.
Well, what was interesting about hearing that again is that the character that you just heard playing Tevye was a character named Topol, who was a great Israeli actor, performer. But he was the man chosen to play it instead of Zero Mostel, who actually played that show on Broadway, was the originator of that role. And the reason he didn't do the movie is because of the effect of the McCarthy blacklist, UAC, The House Un-American Activities Committee blacklisted Zero Mostel, and Hollywood thought he was too big a danger to play that movie, and so he was denied playing that role, although he originated it. And Zero Mostel is a major hero for me, not only born in my same neighborhood, but I look like him, I sound like him, I sing like him, I have the same political outlook as he did, and I've written a play based on his life that I'm trying to get produced. Hey, if there are any producers out there, you want to get involved with producing the Zero Mostel show, you'll get in touch with me, okay?
That wonderful voice you're listening to is Howard Jerome, here in the studio in Kitchener, Ontario. If you've tuned in late, you are listening to Sunday Morning with Barry Shanebaum on Faith FM. So, Howard, going back to Brooklyn, and you've gotten past that pain of your youth that inspired your comedy, and does it all connect with someone like Rodney Dangerfield, who got no respect? Did he get respect when he was a young one?
Well, the truth of his life, and I just finished reading his autobiography, May He Rest in Peace, Alva Shalom, boy, we're losing the great ones, is that he didn't get any respect. His father abandoned him, his mother was cold, and he was raised by his aunt without love, and frankly, he got no respect. And I'm trying to, again, produce a show about his life, because I kind of do a Rodney. I open my eyes big, and I say, hey, I don't get no respect neither. I tell you, I was an ugly baby. When I was born, the doctor took one look at me and smacked my mother. And I said, Mom, I need to breastfeed. She said, can't we just be friends? So my wife comes to me. She said, I'd like to have sex in the back seat of the car. I want you to drive. I tell you, I don't get respect. So playing Zero and playing Rodney would be such a blessing for me. But I want to tell you a little bit about growing up in Brooklyn.
Please do.
When I was bar mitzvahed at the age of 13, I looked around and I looked at the Jews around me. And I was so unimpressed, so disappointed, that by the age of 14, I had become an atheist. I had become so angry at the Jews, those who went to church, to synagogue, in order to flirt, to do business, to show off. I saw them as both surface peoples and bottom dwellers, and I was not impressed. And I was angry at my tradition, and there was nothing but hatred and warfare in the world. And I had no time for God. There was too much pain in the world. No time for God. So I declared myself atheist by the time I was 14. And for the next 20 years, I was a hardcore atheist. For the first 10 of those 20 years, I was the troubadour for the Socialist Labor Party in New York. I was singing songs about labor. There once was a union maid who never was afraid. Or the banks are made of marble. Or a long life to the miners the whole year around. Or in the gloom of mighty cities, or solidarity forever. So, you know, I did those things, you know, and I did them seriously. I was a hardcore missionary, proselytizing atheist. There is no God, and if there is the God, we are in war together because of the misery that I saw around me on planet Earth. The next 20 years, however, I spent being anything but Jewish. I've been a Buddhist, I've been a nudist, I've been a yogi, been on pogi, I've been a whirling dervish, I sat in sweat lodges. And I did them all seriously. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
I studied the Hindu path with a great Bengali yoga master, Sri Ramamurti Saraswati Brahmananda Guru Vananda Ashram. If I could say it that quickly, you know it's probably true. And I studied the Hindu Agnihotra path, which was that of the fire ceremony. And I chanted day and night doing the Hindu chants. And then I studied the Buddhist path with Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche of Karma Choling and Naropa Institute.
Can you say that faster?
Yeah. Karma Choling, Naropa Institute, Chogyam Trungpa, Rinpoche. And actually, last year I met the Dalai Lama while I was wearing a tallis. That was an interesting meeting that they caught on City TV. So for 20 years, I practiced everything. I literally whirled like a whirling dervish, and I've sat in sweat lodges with Indians. And I believe that all of these spiritual practices prepared me for my return to my roots, my Jewish heritage.
What brought you back to your Jewish roots?
Well, strangely enough, purely serendipitously, I was sitting in my manager's office. I had been researching the play on Zero Mostel and asking myself the question, what do Jews believe about the after-death experience? Do we, as Jews, believe in reincarnation? I'd never heard about it as a Jew. I know I heard about it in terms of the Buddhist path that certainly believe in reincarnation and the Hindu path, which believes in reincarnation. But what do Jews believe about it? Because I was doing the research about Zero's death. At that moment, the elevator opened up and a young rabbi steps off the elevator with a box of books. And the first book on the top of this box of books was called The Wheels of a Soul, a Jewish Kabbalistic Understanding of Reincarnation.
Rabbi Berg.
That's right. Mm. And so I said, well, that's too much of a coincidence. So I began my studies with the Kabbalah Center. And I took the first, like, Kabbalah Kindergarten. I took that course. And I took it again because I was not a good kindergarten student. And then I took Kabbalah 2, and I took that again. Same with Kabbalah 3 and 4, and I studied everything they had to offer. And then gradually I began going back to shul, again through the Kabbalah Center. And for the next 13 years, I went to shul again. And during that time period, I had kind of an epiphany, a vision about studying Kabbalah. And it had to do with the fact that I stood in front of a mountain of wisdom and intelligence, and I had a thimble for a brain. And there was no way my thimble brain would consume the wisdom of the Kabbalah. If I am to experience Kabbalah, it's to be through my heart, not my head. And so I began in my devotional practices, going to synagogue on Shabbos, which I learned to love.
At the Kabbalah Center.
I learned to love it.
Right.
And then last year, I kind of got angry at the Kabbalah Center, and I began going to different shuls. I went to a different shul every week, in fact. I've been going to a different shul now for about a year and a half, experiencing what other shuls have to offer. And if somebody would have told me 15 years ago that I would go to a different shul every Shabbos, I'd have said to them, what have you been smoking?
Right.
Do you have any more left? Because there would be no way that I would consider myself a candidate to go to synagogues.
And you've created your own club, and the name of that club is?
It's Club Shul, like Club Med, Club Shul.
Yeah.
And we invite people to come together and talk about shuls. Maybe you go to a shul, maybe you don't. Maybe you're dissatisfied, maybe you love your shul.
Howard, for our Christian listeners, what is a shul?
A synagogue, a house of worship in the Jewish tradition. Just as a church can be seen, not all churches are called churches. Some have their own names for that experience. The shul is the European version of the word synagogue, house of worship for Jews. And I've been to maybe 40 of them over the last year and a half. So I now have a pretty good sense of what happens in synagogues. Conservative, Orthodox, Reform. I've been to many of them. And this is one of my little raps, if I may.
Absolutely. Right?
'Twas the biggest of shuls, 'twas the smallest of shuls, the oldest, the newest, the tallest of shuls, Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, or other Sephardic, Reform all sisters and brothers. Full shuls, empty shuls, waiting for a minion, every shul wonderful in my own opinion. Plain shuls, fancy shuls, shuls inside the woods. Every shul was doing something very good. From Thornhill to Kensington and all stops in between. This is my report on the first 18. So we created a shul hopper's experience to kind of serve as a resource for others who may be interested in either coming back to their tradition or maybe looking around at something else.
How do people join you and your group on Club Shul? Is there a website? Is there contact information? Or what do they do?
Well, you should call me. I'm calling myself Shalom Jerome. Got that? Shalom Jerome at yahoo.ca. Shalom Jerome at yahoo.ca. And I'd love to share with you shul experiences and talk about what yours have been, because you may love your shul or you may be dissatisfied. But our job is what I'm calling to bring people back to unity with a J, Junity, to help
promote Junity,
because the division amongst Jews is a very unhealthy thing. And so we have to, once again, respect one another, because in the Jewish community, there is this division as to who is more pious, more kosher, but that when people ask me who's more Jewish, I say that question is best left to our enemies. They'll be happy to tell you who Jews are. And they don't care whether you're Reform or Orthodox or Conservative. They don't care if you live in Israel or out of Israel. The enemy is very clear about who is a Jew. We all are. And so we should have that clarity. We should be so unified to see ourselves as Jews, regardless of the kind of synagogue we go or don't go to. The way I look at it, God seems to like diversity, likes it in butterflies, likes it in flowers, likes it in birds, and likes it in expressions of devotion, whether you're Jewish or not.
You are listening to the deep and wonderful voice of Howard Jerome, who in my mind is a rabbi of the universe. You're listening to Sunday Morning with Barry Shainbaum on Faith FM. That is the lovely voices of the Oranu Congregation Choir for Humanistic Judaism. Howard, I've heard so many times that while religion and organized religion brings people together, it's the cause of most wars and conflicts and divisions in society. What you say?
If you're teaching love, then you're teaching the expression of God, regardless of what tradition you're in. If you're teaching hatred and then it's okay to kill, and then regardless of what tradition you're in, that is not of God. It's very clear to me, in the Old Testament at least, God makes it clear that thou shalt not murder. Not kill, but murder. And how do you kill babies without murdering them? And whether you're an Israeli soldier in a tank, or whether you are a Palestinian with a suicide belt on, you're committing murder. You're not killing. You're committing murder. And so any tradition that espouses that it's okay to murder is not doing the work of God. And while that insanity may last for a while, it must go, because it does not honor God, nor does it honor the worshipers of every tradition. And I've practiced every tradition, you know? I wrote a song years ago that said, I've got Jesus in my heart, Krishna in my soul, Buddha's on my mind, and the music is rock and roll. We got one God by many names, many gods, but just one aim. Love the people, set the people free. And that's what I believe. That if you have many names, Barry, if you are known as son, as friend, as lover, as radio guy, as photographer, how many names must God have? And so I'm comfortable in all God settings, wherever it is, whether it's in a synagogue, whether it's in a church, if they'd let me in a mosque or a sweat lodge, I'm comfortable when people come together sincerely to sacrifice, to pray, and to create peace for themselves and for others. I'm comfortable in all God settings.
Howard, if you could change places with someone for 1 month, anyone alive today on this planet, who would you change places with?
Osama bin Laden, I think.
Because people want him?
I think if it were possible to redeem somebody on the planet, somebody whose hate is so great in their heart, for whatever reason they believe, if it's possible for somebody like that to be redeemed, and I believe it is, I believe that all human beings can be redeemed. Bush, bin Laden, whoever the Iranian madman is, I believe that all human beings are possible for redemption, and their hearts can open, and they can see the unity amongst their brothers and sisters. I truly, honestly believe that, because it has happened before. One of the things I have been doing for many years is studying with a woman named Dr. Jean Houston, who runs the Mystery School. And as one of the, by mysteries, we're talking about every culture has some great mystery by which they've lived. The Greek cultures and the Romans and the Aboriginal cultures. And the Jewish and Arabic cultures as well have had great mysteries. And so we explore these mysteries. And I've come to believe in the mystery of one of them, which is the story of the great peacemaker, a real man who lived not too far from here on the north shore of Lake Ontario, who came into a time when there was nothing but warfare and revenge. The arts of war were practiced. Men judged their success by their ability to wage war. And the other arts of making things and growing things were sacrificed to the expediency of making war. And born into the never-ending warfare was this guy who's become known as the peacemaker. And the peacemaker went and converted people to the ways of peace in what he called the application of the good mind. We need that now. We need the good mind, the open mind, the new mind, the Renaissance mind, to understand that on this planet of 6 billion of us now, we're all family.
Correct.
And some of us may be nuts, and some of us may be dangerous, but we're all family. And there is no them, there is no there. There's only us, and we're just here. And viewed from afar, from another distant star, they would shrug their shoulders and wonder, what is going on this speck of dust with 6 billion other specks of dust clinging to it, arguing over who's got the right to be a better speck of dust? It's madness and lunacy. Unity must prevail if we are to survive. And I actually do believe that we will survive, because sooner or later we will recognize that your well-being, my well-being, are intrinsically linked. And if you're unhappy, sooner or later you're going to bonk me with it over the head and take my stuff. So I believe that we will get over this madness of my tradition, my God is better than yours, my political system better than yours, my economic system better than yours, and all of those reasons are worthy for you to die, sooner or later we'll get over that and recognize that in order for me to survive, you must survive.
Amen, Howard. Also, the planet is in dire peril. There are serious issues of global warming, plus issues of pollution, and I hope sometime soon, before we reach some tipping point where our grandkids could be in peril, that we take the steps to do what we have to do. You're listening to Sunday Morning with Barry Shanebaum on Faith FM. With listeners in Kitchener-Waterloo, Guelph, Woodstock, Hamilton, Toronto, St. Catharines, Vancouver, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and in Israel, would you like to advertise on the show? Then call Barbara Dowling at Faith FM here in Kitchener, Ontario. Area code 519-575-9090. Rates are very reasonable. One more time, Barbara Dowling, account executive at Faith FM, 519-575-9090. If you could change places with someone who's already passed on, who comes to top of your mind?
The first thing that jumped into my head was Mahatma Gandhi.
Okay.
Because here was a little man who certainly could not beat anybody up, but whose strength came from an integrity of human dignity that was so great that he forced the British Empire to relinquish their stranglehold on India. And he started a whole process called nonviolent passive action, which to me has influenced my life enormously. Just yesterday, I was involved in a festival of nonviolence, and they asked me to make a speech. And I recognized the influence of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King on my life as to what they said, that flight and fight are only two options. In between those two options is the rest of the universe. And so my statement to people is you don't have to carry a gun in order to fight back, nor do you need to hide in your basement in fear. You can choose the third option, which is the option of creative involvement. For example, if God forbid you're living next to a crack house and you know that there's danger in there, what's your response? Hide in your basement, hope it doesn't happen to you, arm yourself and sit at your window? No. I say, here's some things. Get 1,000 of your neighbors, surround that house, pray and chant and sing their blessings and help their healing, because inside that crack house are your children.
That's right. And I've been remiss, and my listeners in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. I can't miss anybody, Howard.
Chambersburg,
Pennsylvania. Steve Schwartz found me on the internet.
Wonderful. Hi, Steve
many
Schwartz,
months ago.
That's great.
Yeah, one of the greatest podiatrists down there in Pennsylvania.
Ah, well, for me, the idea that Gandhi brought forward, which is ahimsa, that is do no harm, that principle of nonviolence can be applied in your life at home, in the interaction you have with your spouse. I know, for example, I've been married 3 times.
Do you get better each time at it?
It's rehearsal.
Okay.
And what I found out is my wife has been given to me by God in order for me to learn that commandment, the one that says, thou shalt not murder, that commandment. So I've learned that commandment in almost 30 years of marriage to my current wife. And it is, I believe, the marriage process is aimed at confronting me, you, in every aspect of your being. Because it is the most demanding of earth relationships, the one you have with your wife. And it's similar, ultimately, to the one you have with your God. Because if you can create peace at home, then there's a possibility that you can create it with your God. And if you can create peace with your God, then there's a possibility you can create it at home as well.
Howard, in your heart and in your head, what do you really feel God is?
A force of intelligence made of love. And since I am made of that creative intelligence, I too am made of love. And I believe that God is a force of life and that life itself wants to live. And that's why I'm optimistic. Ultimately, in the face of all the madness of what we do with each other and the planet, I remain optimistic because I believe that this thing that we call God, which is you and me, we are expressions of that thing called God. We are made of that thing called God. Therefore, we have God's attributes within us, the attributes of forgiveness, of love, of dynamic creativity. We are that. We're made from that. We cannot be anything other than that. So who is God? I'm looking at him right now.
Thank you. You are listening to Sunday Morning with Barry Shanebaum on Faith FM. My guest here in Kitchener, Ontario, is Howard Jerome.
Allein zu bleiben mit der Mädel, ois es geht. Der Kopf dreht sich wie ein Rädel, ois es geht. Wenn man keine Mädel soll, ich hab dich lieb. Ois es geht. Vielleicht mein Mama tu mit Zugen, ois es geht. Aus Sorgen, Harz, Arim zu trugen, ois es geht. Zu sein, aber alle Bus, alle bei sich in Stieb. Schein den besten Zimmern aus, du bist der Loch fein. Oi, seit der ist umgekommen, ist mir gleich rein in die Beine. Ois es geht, ein Liebeswert und noch zu Herren. Ois es geht, wenn's es nicht, du wärst auch Sterren, die mir nicht. Die ach geht du bei mir in Arzen, ois es geht. Kinderliebe, vergess nicht keiner, es kriegt er einfach in die Beine. Also fleckt mein Mame so mir. Sie fleckt werden viel mit Frieden, wenn sie fleckt und heben Reden, find der Chassene, wo sie es gewähnt bei ihr. Wie der Badchen hat gebadchen, also ihr Schein. In Gesingen, wenn sie kallische, wenn, wenn, wenn. Les Murim haben alle aufgespielt, Farchus in Kalle. Oi, Asa Chassene auf mir gesucht allein. Oi, es geht, wenn es spielt der Klarinettel. Oi, es geht, wenn es ein wird die Mafiedel. Oi, es geht, wenn es bloß auf der Trompet. Oh, es ist gut, wenn tummelige Basse Bursche suchen kannst. Oh, in die Beine, oh, es ist gut, ein Liebeswert und noch zu Herren, oh, es ist gut. Wenn es ist nicht, du wärst auch Sterren, die mir nicht. Die Jacht geht du bei mir in Herzen, oh, es ist gut, oh, es ist gut.
And that was the Klezmer Conservatory Band, and they're from the United States. Howard Jerome, you've been on many TV shows. What are your favorite ones?
The next one will be my favorite one.
What's your next one? I don't know.
The next one is always, as a freelance actor looking for the next gig,
yeah.
I wait and wait and wait for the next gig to happen. So that question is a lot easier to answer about theater than it is to answer about TV. I've done, I don't know how many TV shows by now, tons of them. Certainly the Max Glick show was great. I did a series called The City, in which was fun for me as well. I've been on everything, you know, from Night Heat to Doc, from Hot Shots to Adderley. I've done pretty much every kind of TV series there is to do. I've done Avonlea. I've done every kind of TV series.
Cagney and Lacey also?
Worked with, I forget whether it was Cagney or Lacey, but we did work together. Theater is a whole different story. There I can point to a couple of different shows which I'm very proud of. The most recent being a play I did at the Arizona Jewish Theater earlier this year. A play called Two, T-W-O, in which I had the opportunity to play a rabbi, a survivor of Auschwitz, who had lost everything. Lost his family, lost his congregation, and lost his faith, and had become an embittered atheist, and then was confronted with his own atheism as a rabbi. And it was the most demanding, most challenging show I've ever done in my life after 40-something years of being an actor. It schlepped everything out of me, everything I am as an actor, as a Jew, as a human being, because the questions asked were so deep and so profound. And I'd like to just say one thing about the show. Each time the show ended, I would come off the stage and meet the audience because they had been moved, challenged, provoked, opened up, and I would talk to them. The very last show, a little man came up to me. He was older than me, smaller than me. And he came to me and said, I am a survivor. And Schindler's List did not do for me what you did for me today. I was so moved by that statement, I could hardly breathe. Because that's why I had gone to Arizona, to a tiny little theater, to play a show that was so deep, was to open the heart of one man who had been wounded terribly by the Holocaust. So for me, it was a blessing to be able to see that man's eyes as he told me that story.
Every person that we touch, from child to an older person, we make an impact on the world, don't we?
Well, if we're honest about our own process and what we have gone through, and my own process, as I say, I grew up without a father, grew up on welfare, and without a very good self-image, and it required decades of therapy of one kind or another for me to come to grips with that terrible self-image. One of the stories, may I share? If it's inappropriate,
please.
You'll let me know.
Okay. Just remember, we're going live, Howard.
Yes. Well, it had to do with my father's dying words.
Okay.
And as I recalled them later on in therapy, his words to me were Chaim, my Hebrew name, Debista Shmata. And for your listeners who don't know what the word Shmata is, it's a dish rag, a worthless thing. And so to carry that legacy with me for decades, that I thought of myself as a worthless thing.
You were 4 years old when your dying father said that to you.
Yeah. And the discovery of that in therapy, and this is where things are so hopeful, that when I discovered that phrase, and whether it was real or not doesn't matter, I believed it to be real, I got an opportunity to do the tshuva, which is a process in Jewish study of the return, to go back to the moment of the wounding and to recreate it. And so I did. And what I did in that moment in therapy was to look at that and say, my father didn't speak English very well. In fact, Russian and Yiddish were his first two languages. And so when he died, he didn't mean to say that I was a shmata. What he really meant to say was, Chaim, di bist a smata boy. A smart boy.
Yes.
And so I healed myself through that moment. That was my father's intention, was to let me know that I was a smart boy. And it turned out to be true. I am a smart boy. I continue my studies to this day in a variety of fields, from what we call cross-cultural anthropology and sacred psychology, mythology, things that end with ology, that I study at Mystery School with my teacher, Dr. Jean Houston, for the healing, my healing. And I hope and pray that if any of your audience heard those words, that it is possible to heal the wounds that we received in actuality or in our own mindset from our parents.
And isn't there a gift and risk of forgiveness?
My feeling is without forgiveness, you're doomed. Because resentment, as has been told by a wise person, resentment is like drinking poison and hoping somebody else gets sick.
That's right.
מפתח לליבי ולא
listening to the lovely voice of Chava Oberstein from Israel singing The Secret Garden. My guest on Sunday Morning with Barry Shanebaum is Howard Jerome here in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Howard, do you have a clearly defined life purpose and passion and mission?
You know, when I turned 60 and then I turned 65, I'll be 67 this summer, I recognized I had been substantially wrong about two issues. More than two, of course, but two essential issues. The first one was, I thought that when a person reaches 60 and then 65, that they figured something out. God, love, drugs, sex, rock and roll, purpose, right. Money, figured something out. I was wrong about that. And the other thing I was wrong about is I thought there was some sort of diminishment that happens when you're 60 and 65. There has been, thank God, in my life, no diminishment. My energy is enormous. My creativity is out of control. I have such ideas and such God-inspired desires that I am just so filled with life that I can hardly keep from touching myself. It's just an amazing experience of being 67 and wow. still having so much that I need to do, want to do, and passionate about.
Yeah. It is so important to have a purpose and mission in life, and when we do whatever it is it feeding the birds in the backyard or saving souls in Africa by donating money or going there, it keeps us alive, doesn't it?
As I said, I made a speech yesterday at the Festival for Nonviolence, and there were people there from the Christian peace teams, the guys that just went to Iraq, were held captive and then came back. People have committed themselves over long periods of time to social justice issues, to issues of environment, to issues of racism and sexism. And these things are a lifetime's process, because if something was wrong then, it's wrong now. And if you made a commitment to social justice issues, to treating people with human dignity, then you got to stand up and speak out and stay the course over long periods of time. I want to give you an example of 5 years of playing football in Brooklyn, right?
Okay.
I was the only white player on the team. I guess you'd call me the outstanding player. Everybody else was Afro-American, black guys from the South, usually, who came to New York to do whatever they did, and they couldn't make it in the pros, so they decided to play semi-pro football. And so I played. And each year, we would play a benefit game for a different black organization. Year number one, we played for a benefit game for the NAACP. You ever hear of them?
Of course.
Year number two, we played for the CORE. You ever hear of them? Congress of Racial Equality. Year number three, we played for SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Year number four, we played for the Panthers. And then year number five, we played for the Muslims. And they would not let me play. There would be no white man on a Muslim field. And that's when I recognized that even though I had been a battler, a fighter, literally shedding blood for the cause of equality amongst blacks, that there was such hatred and animosity that had been built up in the black community that they would no longer accept my blood as a good offering to be on their side. And it doesn't matter what color you are. If you are filled with love and your heart is open and you embrace all humanity, then you are for unity. But if your heart says, only my people are worthy, only mine, only the Jew, only the black, only the Muslim, only the fundamentalist Christian, if your heart is set in that way and you banish the rest of the humanity, that's a disaster. There are 6 billion of us. How can I as a Jew? And there are only a handful of us. We are less than 0.1% of the Earth's population. How could I as a Jew say my path is the only legitimate path and the rest of the 6 billion are condemned to hell? Mm. How could a Christian say only my people, 1.5 billion of us, we're the only ones who have it right, Jesus is the only way? How could my Muslim brothers say that Allah is the only way and condemned 5 billion people to hell? God loves diversity. God loves it, and God wants more of it, not less of it.
Howard, what would your friends say that you like most about you?
What my friends like most about me?
Yeah, what would they say that you like most about you?
I guess the sense of humor ranks high, and my commitment to social justice issues, because I've been at it for, almost 50 years now. So, I guess there's that. Those two things. I love writing, creating songs and stories and plays. So my friends appreciate my creativity. I run workshops for corporations, in fact, in the areas of creativity, communication, team building, problem solving. I've studied with the best teachers on the planet, and God willing, I do them justice.
Howard, why don't you give out your email and or phone number in case some corporations would like to call you and talk about hiring you to inspire their people?
Again, Shalom Jerome. That's S-H-A-L-O-M-J-E-R-O-M-E. Shalom Jerome at yahoo.ca.
There we go.
Protect and defend you. May He always shield you from shame. May you come to be in Israel shining name. May you be like Ruth and like Esther. May you be deserving of praise. Strengthen them, O Lord, and keep them from the stranger's ways.
May God bless you and grant you long life.
Fill our Sabbath prayer for you. May God make you good mothers and wives.
Husbands who will care for you.
May the Lord protect and defend
your home for what you
have. May the Lord preserve.
And peace,
oh, hear our Sabbath prayer.
Listening to the sounds of Sabbath prayer from the CD Fiddler on the Roof, sung along live with Howard Jerome here in Kitchener. Howard, we have less than a minute left.
Ooh.
What message would you like to leave within 30 seconds to our listeners?
I want to invite everybody to come to the Ashkenaz Festival this Labor Day, that is the first weekend in September, at Harborfront, a worldwide festival of new Yiddish culture. Dancers, musicians, artists, poets, filmmakers, speakers, and most of it free. Come to Ashkenaz, Labor Day weekend, Harborfront, Toronto.
Howard Jerome, thank you so much. Toda rabba and shalom.
Shalom, my friends.
Thank you. My guest has been Howard Jerome here in the studio in Kitchener, Ontario. My guest next week on Sunday Morning with Barry Shanebaum on the phone from Los Angeles will be Marla Brooks. Marla is the author of a book called How to Cook Like a Jewish Grandmother. And she was raised by her grandparents and with fond memories of hanging out in the deli somewhere in the States many years ago. The week after, on the 21st, on the phone from San Francisco will be Jim Barinholtz, Jewish man who is a snake charmer. I'd like to meet one of those. He is an author. He's involved with dance, all the creative arts that you can think of. My name is Barry Shanebaum. When I'm not here in Kitchener, I'm mostly in Toronto, Ontario, where I make my living as a professional photographer, professional speaker, and author of a book called Hope in Heroes. Hope in Heroes is an inspirational photography book of many wonderful people of all different religions available in the self-help section and chapters in Indigo. I'd like to invite you to come to the Gladstone Hotel tomorrow night and listen to the Sisters of Shaneville. The Sisters were guests on my show a few weeks ago. And we're going to end with a song from the Sisters of Shaneville called Ketzela Bruges. Have a good week. Thank you.
Quetzalai but I guess and push a case the rock aloft the news in the shed steve so my yes bin ban and ishta my royce my date is a shmare bosnik and my mom gun with fish and mike and my bride is a gagyoshnik so say all the same is in ten stark Celebrages, mushi gays, the rock lost the news. In a servant's this and my yes, bin ban and ich stamme reus. Der Wetter ist gestanden in die Rotten, und die Bobbe ja endlich kehren Gas. In ein Bride sitzt in Astroben, in die Schwester, tralalalala.
Sadly, Howard Jerome has passed away on December 17, 2021. Leaving behind a legacy of laughter and love, he will be missed. May he rest in peace. This has been Perspectives with Barry Shanebaum. You can find all our new episodes on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. You can find episodes of When This Was a Radio Show on SoundCloud.com. Barry Shanebaum can be found on Facebook at Barry Shanebaum and on Instagram at BarryZS2018. Thank you for listening.